Imagine watching your entire life savings just disappear from your bank account, right? Transfer by transfer.
Oh, that is literally a nightmare scenario.
Right. But here is the kicker. Yeah. You are actively on the phone with a highly professional support agent.
Right. Someone who says they're helping you.
Exactly. They are helping you secure your compromised device. You're following all their instructions. You're verifying your identity. But the person on the other end of the line, they aren't tech support.
No, they're the ones actually draining the account.
Yes. Today, we are looking at a fascinating and, well, frankly, chilling report on Apple's recent shift, you know, from what we all used to call the Apple ID to this new Apple account.
Yeah, that terminology shift is actually huge.
It really is. And more importantly, we are exploring the massive cybersecurity implications behind it. So the mission for this deep dive is to understand why elite criminal organizations have, like, completely stopped trying to hack Apple's technology directly.
They don't even bother with the tech anymore.
Right. Instead, they are hacking the human trust surrounding the brand. We're going to break down the mechanics of how these modern attacks just bypass everything. Facial recognition, two-factor authentication, all of it.
And crucially, how you can actually protect your digital identity in this crazy landscape.
Exactly. Okay, let's unpack this, because to truly understand the scale of the threat, we first have to redefine what this account actually is now.
Yeah, and that foundational shift is really the core of the whole issue. I mean, for a decade, the public has thought of an Apple ID as just a simple credential, you know?
Yeah, just an email and a password.
Exactly. You typed it in to buy a song on iTunes or, I don't know, to download a weather app. It was basically a transaction tool.
A localized login, essentially.
Right. But the transition to the term Apple account, that is Apple acknowledging reality. This is no longer a localized login. It is the absolute bedrock of your digital identity.
Because it connects everything.
Literally everything. It syncs your iPhone, your Mac, your iCloud data, your encrypted communications, your health data.
Which is wild to think about.
Right. Your financial cards, all your account recovery mechanisms. It's all tied into a single unified profile now.
Right. It's the connective tissue for everything. I was thinking about this, and it's kind of like, imagine the old Apple ID was a single room key in a hotel.
Okay. I like that.
Right. So it got you into one specific room on the third floor. If you lost it, I mean, the worst someone could do is, what, drink the mini bar and watch pay-per-view?
Yeah, a minor inconvenience, really.
Exactly. But the modern Apple account is the hotel's master key. Only it doesn't just open every single door in the building. It opens the hotel's main safe, it accesses the guest registry, and it actually allows whoever holds it to rewrite the locks on all the doors.
So the real manager can't even get back in.
Yes. The real manager is completely locked out.
That ability to rewrite the locks, that is the perfect way to frame it. Because when you look at it through the lens of a threat actor, you immediately see why this massive concentration of access makes that master key so incredibly valuable.
Because the risk is cumulative now.
Exactly. It's cumulative. When criminals compromise this account, they aren't looking to, you know, fence a physical iPhone for a few $100.
They don't care about the hardware.
The physical hardware is practically worthless compared to the data inside. I mean, access reveals your name, your telephone numbers, your trusted contacts, your personal photograph.
Legal documents, too, probably.
Oh, absolutely. Your entire communication history. And they use that absolute mountain of personal data to establish credibility.
They want the trust.
Right. They want the human trust that comes from owning your identity, which they then use to seamlessly impersonate you to your bank, your employer, your family.
And because Apple's technical security, like the actual encryption and the software architecture, is literally world class, criminals have realized it's a massive waste of resources trying to brute force a password, right?
Oh, completely. Nobody is trying to find a backdoor into iCloud servers anymore.
It's too hard. So the most efficient way to use that master key is to just trick you into handing it over yourself.
Right. The security architecture expects the user to be the final arbiter of truth.
Wow, the final arbiter of truth.
Yeah, so attackers just pivot entirely to social engineering. They focus all their resources on persuading the legitimate user to perform the exact actions the security model requires.
Like entering a password or approving a biometric sign-in.
Or disclosing a verification code over the phone.
Which brings us to how they actually pull this off. But wait, I have to push back here for a second.
Go for it.
Because we hear about phishing campaigns endlessly.
Constant barrage, yeah.
We all know the basics. We know not to click on random links from foreign princes. I'll admit, I've had that moment of panic where I got a text about an unauthorized, like, $900 charge, and my thumb was hovering over the link before my brain caught up.
We've all been there.
Right, but I didn't click it. So why are genuinely smart tech-savvy people falling for this today? And more importantly, if Apple tracks IP addresses and device locations, how does a fake website actually get past two-factor authentication?
That's a great question.
Doesn't the system know the login is coming from a hacker's computer miles away?
Well, what's fascinating here is that we aren't talking about traditional phishing anymore.
They aren't.
No. Attackers are using something called an authentication relay attack, or a man-in-the-middle attack. To answer your question about the IP address, the criminals aren't trying to log in from their own computers.
Oh, they aren't.
Not at all. They are tricking you into logging in for them.
Wait, how does that work mechanically? Break that down for me.
Okay, think of it like a con artist standing between two people who are passing secret notes. The attacker sends you a highly targeted, localized text message that creates immense urgency, like that $900 charge you mentioned.
Something that makes you panic.
Exactly. You click the link, and it takes you to a website that looks exactly like Apple's login page. Flawless. But it's actually a reverse proxy.
A reverse proxy.
Yeah. So when you type your username and password into that fake site, the server instantly forwards those keystrokes to the real Apple website in real time.
Oh, wow. So the fake site is basically just a transparent window looking at the real site.
Exactly that. Apple sees a legitimate login attempt with the correct password, so Apple triggers a real two-factor authentication code to be sent to your phone.
Because Apple thinks I'm logging in.
Right. And at that exact moment, the attacker's fake website prompts you to enter that code. Or, and this is even more effective, they call you.
The fake tech support call.
Yep. The caller ID is spoofed to say Apple Security. A very professional sounding person says, we've detected an unauthorized login. I just sent you a secure verification code to cancel the login. Can you read it back to me?
And because you are panicked, you literally just read it back to them.
Exactly.
You think you're proving your identity to Apple to stop a hack, but you just gave the con artist the final piece of the puzzle.
Once you read that code or type it into their proxy site, the proxy passes it to the real Apple server. Apple authenticates the session and generates a session cookie.
Like a digital stamp of approval.
Yeah, a tiny piece of data that says, this user is verified. And the attacker intercepts that session cookie. They don't even need your password anymore at that point.
They just have the cookie.
With that cookie, their computer is now fully authenticated as your device. They bypass the IP checks because, as far as the system is concerned, the cryptographic challenge was completed successfully by you, the user.
That is insane.
And the crucial fact to remember here is that Apple explicitly states they will never, ever ask for your verification codes.
Never.
Or ask you to disable your device protections. If someone is asking for a code over the phone, they are an attacker. Period.
That is terrifying. It's using the security system's own rules completely against it.
Mm.
But, you know, the source material also outlines a completely different approach, which is wild.
The physical one, yeah.
Yeah. Sometimes attackers bypass all that remote digital proxy stuff and go straight for the physical device in the real world. Here's where it gets really interesting. The irony of this is just staggering to me.
It really is.
We walk around with these $1,000 pieces of futuristic technology in our pockets. They have depth mapping, facial recognition. They have encrypted secure enclaves, machine learning.
All this sci-fi tech.
Right. And the ultimate Achilles heel that brings the whole fortress down is a simple 4 or 6 digit passcode that we type in at the grocery store line 100 times a day.
It is the ultimate vulnerability by design. Criminals have adapted to this by utilizing a technique called shoulder surfing.
Which sounds so old school.
It is, but it works. Right. They operate in crowded, dimly lit public places. Bars, concerts, train stations. They simply observe you typing in your passcode from a distance.
Just looking over your shoulder.
Yeah, or sometimes they use the zoom lens on their own phones to record you doing it from across the room. Once they memorize that short string of numbers, they physically steal the device, like a snatch and grab on the subway right before the doors close.
But why is the passcode so dangerous? Like, why does that override Face ID? If they don't have my face, shouldn't they be locked out?
Under the hood, biometrics like Face ID or Touch ID are probabilistic.
Meaning what, exactly?
Meaning they match a complex mathematical model of your face, but lighting changes or, you know, you wear sunglasses. It's not always 100% match.
Ah, okay, that makes sense.
So the system needs a deterministic fallback, a hard cryptographic key that is either 100% right or 100% wrong. That is your passcode.
And because it's the fallback?
Because it is the ultimate fallback, the operating system treats it as the absolute highest level of authorization. With just the passcode, a thief can bypass Face ID entirely.
Wow.
They can dive into the settings, use the passcode to authenticate, and immediately change your overall Apple account password.
Which locks you out.
Instantly, this forcefully logs your account out of your Mac, your iPad, and locks you out of your own digital life before you even realize the phone is stolen.
Now, Apple didn't just ignore this, right? The report talks about stolen device protection. How does that change the mechanics of this attack?
So, stolen device protection is a vital layer of defense, but we need to understand how it functions mechanically. When you enable it, the operating system uses geofencing.
Okay, so it tracks your location.
Right. If the phone determines it is away from a familiar location, like your home or your office, it completely removes the passcode fallback for highly sensitive actions.
Oh, that's smart.
Yeah. If a thief tries to change your Apple account password at a bar, the phone will absolutely require a successful Face ID scan. No passcode allowed.
But the shoulder surfing doesn't work for that.
Exactly. Furthermore, it enforces a one-hour security delay before allowing major changes, which gives you time to realize the phone is gone and put it in loss mode.
That sounds like it solves the problem, honestly.
It mitigates it, certainly, but it doesn't solve it entirely.
Why not?
Well, it relies entirely on the user actively turning the feature on before the theft occurs. A lot of people don't know it exists.
That's a good point.
And even with it on, if the phone is stolen while you are at a quote-unquote familiar location, like, say, your apartment building lobby, the protection might not trigger. No single control removes the risk.
So if the configuration isn't perfect, the system just defaults back to that vulnerable 6-digit passcode.
Correct.
And the attacks don't even stop once the phone is stolen and locked. The report details this brutal follow-up attack.
Oh, the Find My scam.
Yes. Let's say you do everything right. Your phone is snatched, but you immediately get to a computer, you put the phone in loss mode, and it's basically a brick.
Useless to the thief.
Right. The criminals will actually text your new replacement phone a few days later, or send an email claiming, your lost iPhone has been found by local authorities. Click here to view its location on Find My.
Which is, of course, just another reverse proxy phishing page.
Right. You are so desperate to get your expensive phone back, or worried about your photos, mm-hmm. you log in. But they don't have your phone. They just want you to authenticate so they can remove the activation lock from the stolen device.
Yeah, it's brutal. Once that lock is removed, they can factory reset the bricked phone and sell it on the secondary market for full value.
It's just adding insult to injury.
It is a relentless, multi-stage life cycle. But we have to ask why they go to all this effort beyond just reselling hardware.
Right.
Once an attacker has bypassed the lock, whether they tricked you digitally or shoulder surfed you physically, the ultimate goal is the financial reconnaissance hidden inside your data.
Let's dive into that financial fallout. Because I think a lot of people listening right now might be thinking, okay, this is scary, but I don't use Apple Pay. I deliberately refuse to have my primary banking app installed on my phone for this exact reason.
I hear that all the time.
Right. So are they still at risk?
The short answer is unequivocally yes.
Wow, unequivocally.
Yes. The risk extends far beyond the applications currently installed on your home screen. When criminals gain access to your Apple account, they treat the environment as criminal reconnaissance infrastructure.
Reconnaissance infrastructure?
Yeah.
How does that actually work in practice, like step by step?
Consider how the cloud operates, right? Your iCloud mail, your notes, your photos, they all sync seamlessly. The first thing an attacker does is deploy automated scripts to search your iCloud mail.
So they aren't manually reading my emails?
No, they aren't reading your personal emails to your family. The script rapidly searches for keywords, words like statement, invoice, verification, wire transfer, or crypto.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. In a matter of seconds, they have a complete searchable map of every banking relationship, investment platform, and cryptocurrency exchange you use.
Because every time you open an account anywhere, you get a welcome email or a monthly statement notification.
Correct. And once they map your financial footprint, they go to those specific bank websites. They hit forgot password.
And where does the password reset link go?
Right into the iCloud email inbox that they now control.
Man, that is so simple, but so devastating.
But banks have security too, right? The bank might send a two-factor authentication text message to your phone number to verify the reset.
Right, the SMS codes.
But remember, if the attacker controls your Apple account, they can often intercept those messages through synced iMessage on the web. Or they use your stolen physical phone to receive the SMS directly.
They are weaponizing your own security safety nets against you.
Exactly.
And the report points out that it's not just personal banking. There is a huge corporate risk here with business email compromise.
That's a massive, massive issue.
If your personal phone also has your work email synced to it, attackers use your compromised address book. They look at your past email threads. They can seamlessly reply to an ongoing conversation with your boss or your company's accounting department.
Yep, just dropping right into the middle of the thread.
Saying like, hey, I'm traveling, but I need this invoice paid immediately to this new vendor account. And because the message is coming from your genuine authenticated account, sitting natively in a trusted thread, the accounting department just pays it.
Because the trust is already established. Furthermore, attackers utilize optical character recognition, OCR, to scan your synced photos and notes.
Wait, they scan your photos for text?
Yes. People frequently take photos of their passports, their driver's licenses, their W-2 tax documents just for convenience.
Guilty. I definitely have a picture of my license in my camera roll.
A lot of people do. And in the cryptocurrency space, users often take a screenshot of their seed phrases.
Oh, no.
Yeah. These are the ultimate unchangeable master passwords for decentralized crypto wallets, and people just save them in their camera roll. Once an attacker runs an OCR script across your iCloud backup, they find those seed phrases and drain the wallets in minutes.
Because there's no fraud department for crypto.
None. It is immediate, irreversible financial loss. The Apple account basically provides all the reconnaissance needed to conquer all of your external financial accounts.
It is a literal goldmine. Which explains why this isn't just, you know, a lone hacker in a basement wearing a hoodie anymore. The financial payouts are so massive that criminals have scaled these attacks into a literal industry.
Hmm.
We are talking about billions of dollars moving through the blind spots between our tech companies and our financial institutions.
Oh, the scale is indeed industrial.
Let's look at the numbers.
Sure. Looking at the data from 2025, the FBI received over 5,100 complaints specifically regarding account takeover fraud. And the reported losses exceeded $262
million. $262
million. And keep in mind, that is only the fraction of fraud that victims actually realized and formally reported to federal authorities. The true number is magnitudes higher.
Over a quarter of $1 billion just in reported losses. How are they executing this on such a massive industrial scale?
It comes down to the maturation of crime as a service, or CASAS.
Crime as a service, like software as a service.
Exactly. A threat actor today doesn't need to know how to code a reverse proxy, and they don't need to build a fake Apple website from scratch.
They just buy it.
Yep. They go on dark web forums or encrypted Telegram channels and buy a monthly subscription to an automated credential relay tool.
A monthly subscription. That is wild.
These tools come with bulletproof hosting, automated bulk SMS services, and API integrations. They also utilize generative AI to create flawless, localized scripts for those fake support calls.
Oh, so the AI writes the scripts.
Yeah, the AI removes the grammatical errors and strange phrasing that used to be the biggest red flags in phishing emails.
It's literally software as a service, but for extortion. But, why aren't the giant institutions, the banks, the telecommunication companies, Apple stopping this at a systemic level?
That is the million-dollar question.
This brings us to what the report calls the fragmentation flaw. I love this concept because it perfectly explains the systemic failure.
It's a great way to visualize it.
It's like a coordinated bank heist where you have three different security guards on duty. One guard is looking at the alley and sees a broken window. The second guard is monitoring the street and sees a getaway car running with no driver. The third guard is inside the vault and sees a guy in a ski mask filling a bag.
But they don't talk to each other.
Right. None of the guards have radios. They have no way to talk to each other to piece together that the bank is actively being robbed.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, that analogy perfectly captures the structural vulnerability of our digital economy.
Right.
Apple's servers see a login that looks completely normal because it has the correct password and the correct two-factor code. A telecommunications provider sees a routine request to port a phone number to a new SIM card. A bank sees an authenticated request to add a new payee and wire funds.
And individually, none of that is suspicious.
Individually, these are mundane actions that happen millions of times a day legitimately. Because data privacy laws and corporate silos prevent these systems from communicating in real time, nobody sees the entire attack chain.
Nobody sees the whole picture.
The fundamental paradigm shift we are facing is that successful authentication is no longer proof of genuine human intent.
Say that again, because that feels like the thesis of this whole problem. Successful authentication is no longer proof of genuine intent.
Correct. Think about it. The victim is physically typing in the correct password and the correct code. The cryptographic system looks at the math and says, great, it's really them. Open the vault.
But it's not really them.
I mean, it is them typing it, but the victim is doing it while being actively manipulated by a criminal on a spoofed phone call. The technology worked flawlessly. The encryption didn't fail. But human intent was compromised, and the fragmented institutions just cannot detect that nuance.
Which means we, the listeners, cannot just rely on the institutions to catch it. We need to build our own comprehensive defense system.
We have to.
We need a resilient control stack, and we need to know exactly how to respond if a breach actually happens. So what does this all mean for building our armor? What is the strongest defense against a man-in-the-middle proxy attack?
Defense comes down to layering controls that remove the human element from the authentication process entirely.
Remove the human element?
Yes. First and foremost, hardware security keys. If you are someone at high risk, a journalist, an executive, or just someone holding significant crypto assets, you need physical security keys.
Like those little USB drives.
Exactly. These are small USB or NFC devices you physically tap on your phone to log in.
But wait, how do those physically stop the proxy attack? If I'm tricked into going to the fake site, couldn't I just tap my key on the fake site and authenticate the hacker anyway?
This is the absolute brilliance of hardware keys. Under the hood, they use a protocol like FIDO2. When you tap the key, it physically reads the actual URL of the website you are on.
Oh.
It looks at the domain. If the fake site is, you know, applesecurity-alert-login.com, instead of the genuine apple.com, the hardware key realizes the math doesn't match.
So it knows you're being tricked.
Yes. It will physically refuse to sign the cryptographic challenge, even if you, the human, are completely fooled and desperately want it to work. It takes the trust out of your hands and puts it in the cryptography.
That is incredible. The hardware protects you from your own panic. What else should we do?
Well, enable stolen device protection immediately, ensuring it forces biometric checks for all security changes. Ensure your device passcode is complex. Use an alphanumeric password rather than just a six-digit PIN.
Right, making it harder to shoulder surf.
And develop the habit of never entering it where someone could be watching. Also, actively review your recovery contacts. Ensure only highly trusted people have the power to help reset your account.
Okay, good advice.
Finally, exercise absolute communication discipline. If you ever receive an unexpected authentication prompt on your screen that you did not initiate yourself, reject it.
Just hit cancel.
Never assume it's a glitch. Reject it.
Okay, but let's say the absolute worst happens.
Mm-hmm.
The listener gets tricked. They are on the phone, they read the code, and suddenly the call drops.
Yeah.
The listener realizes, oh no, that wasn't Apple.
Panic sets in.
Right. What is the absolute first, most critical step they should take the moment they realize they've been compromised?
The immediate instinct is usually to grab the compromised phone and try to quickly change the password. That is a mistake.
Why, really?
Yes. The absolute first step is to initiate your recovery from a completely separate, trusted device. A device the criminal does not have access to, like a spouse's phone or a secure work laptop.
Why is changing the password not enough? Doesn't changing the password automatically lock the hacker out of everything?
It locks the front door, sure. But the attackers have already climbed through the side windows and set up camp. You have to address the entire exposed identity.
Okay, so from the trusted device, what do we do?
Once you are logged in from a trusted device, you must immediately revoke all active web sessions. Kick everyone out. Yen, you must check your iCloud mail settings for unauthorized email forwarding rules.
Forwarding rules.
Yes. Criminals will set up silent rules so that even after you change your password and lock them out of the account, all incoming emails from your bank are automatically forwarded to their hidden email address.
Wow. So they maintain persistence even if they lose access to the main account? Precisely. You must also contact your telecom carrier to check for unauthorized SIM forwarding, ensuring your texts aren't being routed to a different phone.
You're hunting down all the back doors they left.
Yes. And finally, bypass the tech entirely. Call your financial institutions directly and freeze activity. The response must be as comprehensive as the initial attack. You aren't just securing a phone, you are locking down an entire digital footprint.
Because it's not just a consumer technology profile anymore, it's the master key.
Exactly.
To quickly recap everything we've explored today, an Apple account is a highly valuable foundational layer of your digital identity. Criminal organizations are targeting it not by writing complex code to break Apple's servers, but through intense, multi-layered human manipulation.
Hacking the human.
Yes, they are hacking our panic, our inherent trust in brands, and our daily habits. From shoulder surfing our passcodes in coffee shops to setting up elaborate AI-driven fake support calls, they want that master key to map and drain our financial lives. So, the biggest takeaway for you listening today is to literally look at the device in your hand differently.
It changes everything.
It does. It's not just a communication tool or a camera. Treat its security and the codes that guard it with the exact same reverence you would the deed to your house.
And this raises an important, slightly philosophical question to leave you with. We have spent the last decade celebrating the frictionless convenience of the cloud.
Right, having our photos, our money, and our communications seamlessly synced and instantly accessible across every device we own.
But if centralizing our entire lives into one incredibly powerful digital identity is exactly what makes us so catastrophically vulnerable to these attacks, will the future of security force us to actively decentralize our lives again?
Oh, that's interesting.
Could we see a necessary return to physical, disconnected hardware tokens, keeping our most sensitive financial data entirely offline just to guarantee our identities are safe from the convenience of the cloud?
It's a heavy thought. Because if that hotel master key can open every door, empty every safe, and rewrite every lock, maybe it's time we stop carrying it in our front pocket.